My name is Caroline Humphreys. It is a very great pleasure to welcome you to our first ILCR event of this semester. And we are exceptionally lucky today to have two speakers, Professor the Right Honourable Sir David Edward and Professor Malik Darlin, who are going to introduce us to a crucially important legal and policy initiative called the Breathing Space Project, and also to reflect on this project in the light of the current COVID-19 crisis, and indeed more broadly in terms of the rule of law. Sir David Edward was one of the founding member judges on the Court of First Instance of the European Communities, and he was also judge of the European Court of Justice from 1992 until 2004. He served as a special advisor to numerous House of Lords select committees, and is the author of quite literally hundreds of journal articles and essays on European law and the history of law and constitutionalism. Professor Malik Darlin is a multi-jurisdictional legal practitioner, a transnational regulatory lawyer, and also, I love this self-description, Malik, an academic activist. He is principal of the Quraysh Institute and holds the chair in international law and public policy at Queen Mary University of London. He too has published widely on legal and policy matters, stretching all the way from Islamic law and statecraft to international regulatory law and geopolitics. So David Edward, I think you're going to go first.
I'm going to start. Well, what we're talking about really begins with the two ideas of the rule of law and legal certainty. They're related, although they're different. And what I want to explain is what they mean for practical purposes and also how they're related. So beginning with the rule of law, that was the subject of an extremely important book. It's called The Rule of Law by Tom Bingham. Tom Bingham was the president of the Supreme Court, although he was on the previous body, the House of Lords. And he was a very important lawyer and sadly died quite suddenly. What does the rule of law mean, really? Well, the basic idea is that everyone is subject to the law. The law is above us. And that is linked to the idea of constitutionalism, the idea that there are basic rules on which, or on the basis of which, the state will operate. There is, as you probably know, a challenge to the idea of constitutionalism in this country at the very moment. But going back to the rule of law, for present purposes, let's assume that it means that we live by known laws impartially administered. The laws should be known and should be administered impartially. Put negatively, we should not be subject to arbitrary decisions. We should have a stable basis for our lives. And that links into the idea of legal certainty. Legal certainty, the idea, implies not that the law will always be the same, but really two things. First of all, we should be able to find out what the law is at any given moment. It shouldn't be secret. And secondly, that the law will be changed by accepted methods, by known methods, and won't be changed in an arbitrary fashion. The expression legal certainty in most other languages is legal security, the idea that we are wrapped in a protective blanket of lawfulness. Now, coming to the present situation and how the Breathing Space Project works in that context, we're talking about the common law system of precedence. And that's the system of precedence is the way in which in this country we look at the idea of legal certainty. In other words, in applying, administering justice to the individual, the court will follow what has been done before and what is therefore known. In other words, you have a system of precedents of previous case law, which enables you to know how a court will deal with your case. Now, of course, if that were always so, there would be no law reports, no changes in the law. But the courts do develop the law. In new situations, the courts find a new way of adapting. And that's the problem to which the Breathing Space Project looks to find a workable solution. Because although the common law has worked out a number of well-known methods of dealing with the unexpected, the COVID pandemic is totally unexpected. It has created a situation in which the basis of fact and common understanding on which the existing legal systems are assumed to work has been completely changed. Essentially, time has moved on, but the world has stood still in the last 6 months. And the problem, particularly for contracts, is that the time has moved on, but the world for which the contracts were made has changed totally. And that really is what the Breathing Space Project seeks to deal with. So I'll pass over now to Malik to talk about the Breathing Space Project and the various ways in which that's been developed.
Thank you, Sir David. This was a fantastic introduction, and I just want to say it's a pleasure to be with you all here today. And obviously the vast and, you know, pleasure and honor to be speaking next to Sir David, and always at the Institute with Caroline and John, who are a source of inspiration.
I agree entirely.
Yes. And I just want to say also to the IMLET students that this is to be honest, there's nothing better to do in the world than to study an IMLET right now. And more so, I teach LLMs, but I can tell you that I wish I had the time to reflect and think about legal history. In fact, this is what the project is about, this Breathing Space Project. And I'm not sure all lawyers have these tools to go into legal historiography and so on. But let me jump into what this project is or was, and sort of what is happening. And what I want you to think about is this: the evolution of, as a response by the legal community to this surprising pandemic. As Sir David said, we weren't expecting it. And therefore, the expectation was that the law in our common law systems was going to react after the fact, after a case is brought. And all of a sudden, our idea or our view about certainty has changed completely, because here's something that's happening everywhere at the same time around the world. And, you know, we just didn't want to stand still like a deer or something as the headlights were coming. So the Breathing Space was basically a project by the British Institute for International Comparative Law, which aimed to address the huge challenges that COVID-19 related cases will have on legal systems around the globe. And it was Mario Draghi who sort of described the risk of a plethora of defaults, leaving irreversible damage. So a group of former senior judges and scholars, including Sir David, sort of came together in April 2020 to draft a, again, April is the first marker, draft concept note one, to address or start a conversation about necessary, you know, legal steps to address this universal challenge and unprecedented challenge. And again, please note that we are dealing with mainly common law judges, and it's not in our nature or not in the nature of common law judges or former judges to address something ahead of time. Maybe for those of you who studied in the civil law tradition, you know that in the supremacy of norms, you know, deal with jurisprudence or legal scholars, but this goes differently. And this is where my regulatory instinct is looking at. It's interesting how we tease out some of these sort of concepts. So yes, the legal community had debates about concepts like force majeure, frustration, impossibility, and other remedies, but we didn't necessarily think that we found the answers there. And therefore, this idea of let's look at comparative legal analysis and maybe share best practices, because this is happening across the world. So concept note one was drafted, and it was very brief, very conservative in the assertions that it was meant to say. But it clearly was concerned with commercial activity and the idea of how to minimize disruption to supply chains, which again, we started to understand that there is a different kind of transnational impact. It's not just a state to state or investor state. This can stop the world. So how do we take steps to stop the whole world and make sure that it does not suffer a deep depression? So the three main points out of concept note one was everyone needed to accept in these challenging times that justice must take into account the social economic context against which disputes are considered. They are not a zero-sum game between the two parties. The second point is a large volume of global trade is underpinned by contracts under English law. So if we were to stay positive, this might present an opportunity for British institutions and enterprises to offer solutions which will help the global recovery from the COVID-19 crisis. The third point is in the coming months, we will need a degree of judicial flexibility and pragmatism. So common law systems have the ability to adapt, but we should also look to solutions to these problems offered by civil legal systems like in France or Germany. And I feel that this is a huge leap forward in how legal traditions and systems work together, or at least how our judiciary is viewing this world. But some points came up. So after what we called the concept note, it became concept note one, and there were some reactions, both from the legal community, and it was meant to stir some conversations. I think the first person who spoke about it was Lord Neuberger, who was one of the Supreme, who was a former Supreme Court judge. So yes, they wanted to see what is being tried in other countries and what we might learn from that, or indeed whether anything innovative has since been tried in the UK. Point B was that there is a warning. There was a serious warning within the legal community about or against seeking judicial creativity. And perhaps we can, or we should, explore how far the judicial community think that can be taken. And there was a comment by some solicitors that only judges can be trusted with what their clients and interests demand. The last sort of takeaway from the reaction was that about the practical application of the Breathing Space Initiative and the practical steps which may be taken in the months ahead to avoid a deluge of disputes. So concept node 2 was born, which was a large sort of comparative approach, which Sir David sort of worked on as well, bringing the European view. And I'll mention 2 points about concept node 2. But also, I think point B about this idea that breathing space and flexibility somehow equated to anti-litigation. And I think the point was that it wasn't so, but we need to be creative. I'm, of course, one of those people who are in the front guards and saying, we don't have time for this discussion. But it was that kind of process of deliberation and sort of thinking through these issues. So what happened? What's next? Or what happened after this? Again, I said there was this reaction of being positive about what the British legal tradition can offer. There was a guidance. I can't say that it was directly related to the Bickel comment, but I think certainly hearing some of the judges speak, like Lord Phillips or David and Lord Neuberger speak about this issue, the Cabinet Office issued a guidance on responsible contractual behavior in the performance and enforcement of contracts impacted by COVID-19 emergency. And this was issued on the 7th of May of this year. The Chartered Institute of Arbitrators, or secondly, the Chartered Institute of Arbitrators and the Center for Effective Dispute Resolution, so one is an arbitration body and one is a mediation body, issued a scheme called the Pandemic Business Dispute Resolution Service. So they try to find ways where you can switch from pure mediation, pure arbitration, to look at a flexible sort of mixed mode system. And then it was actually finally accepted that in the same way the global medical community has come together to discuss best practices to tackle health impacts of COVID-19, now is the time for the global legal community and legal institutions to work in a collaborative and speedy manner. And I think that realization was very important to move forward and not to be as restrained about coming up with solutions. And mind you, there were those who were out of the bench expressing their views, but also being very cautious not to probably, or sensitive to those who were still on the bench. And that was an interesting interaction as we look at how our common law tradition has been developed. Concept note two was effectively a wider, so it was based on comparative law. It was meant to generate wider discussion, sort of almost like a white paper. And it was designed to apply across jurisdictions, which I found absolutely fascinating as an exercise. And you can imagine how this can go on for a long time and should be considered by businesses all over the world. And if possible, pointing obviously to the recent Cabinet Office guidance. Let me tell you about an interesting development, which is concept note 3, which hasn't been published yet. But I think since you're all listening to this lecture, I can tell you some of the things that will come up as a preview. But it also points out that not everything has been covered yet. And it's still very hard for us to capture everything if we want to think about the possible ramifications of COVID-19. So yes, it was meant to establish guidelines for the resolution of disputes following the 2020 pandemic. So it's focused on something called guidelines, looking at the deluge of litigation and arbitration this time. So it's the idea that both of those processes of dispute resolution would take so long in terms of resolving the disputes. It underlines some of the conclusions of the comparative study in concept note 2, but very specifically builds on those themes to talk about practical guidelines which might be adopted to encourage a more conciliatory approach to contractual disputes without prejudicing or altering parties' legal rights. And that is a very fine line. But what was very interesting to me is that it captured this challenge of trying to adopt this broader view of what the relevance of good faith meant. So, and this is, in my view, quite interesting when you look at the civil and common law tradition. But also, practicality didn't just mean, you know, modifying legal rights or whatever it is. It was actually an interesting view about behavioral legal analysis, that there is something about how humans will behave during this time and how they'll approach the legal duties and how they want to approach how they come about the legal proceedings, which I'm not sure if I've ever seen something like that before, or Sir David would know more than me, but I thought that it's very interesting. So I'll give you the three subtitles, and I'll end with that, or of the guidance. So A is going to be the interactions between contractual parties, behaviors aimed towards supporting contractual relationships. And here's this point about behavior. Point B is about dispute resolution considerations, behaviors aimed towards resolution and or avoiding escalation. Then point C, or subtitle C, is alternative, or subheading C, alternative dispute resolution, ADR, and legal proceedings, behaviors aimed toward efficient legal proceedings and resolution using ADR techniques or other available procedures. Clearly, the concept notes are still evolving. It is interesting to see how they will evolve. Today's going to be one of those markers as new announcements will come. But I do want to now stop talking about the breathing space and leave it back to Sir David Edward, who will reflect a little bit on the idea of competition and other possibilities or other topics he thinks, or legal problems that will arise as a result.
The COVID-19 pandemic has, of course, produced challenges to the administration of the law in a number of respects. And the Breathing Space Initiative is mainly concerned with the contractual relations between companies and individuals, how they can be resolved. So to speak, they're on an equal plane, one against the other, and how is the arbitrator or judge deal justly and equitably between them. There is another area of law which is often called economic law, and it really developed in this country, at least relatively recently, and mainly as a result of this country being a member of what was the European Community, now the European Union, and we've left it. But nevertheless, it affects this country and certainly affects the remaining 27 countries of the European Union. And in particular, I want to talk about competition law, because one of the elements in what's called the level playing field as between different countries and between different individuals is that their activities will be controlled to some extent in order to promote your economic ends. In particular, competition law. Now, competition law has four principal aspects. One is the rule against cartels, between agreements between companies to share markets or fix prices. And one of the basic principles of that aspect of competition law is that companies should work under their own steam and shouldn't get into cahoots with other companies. Rather, economic advantage is produced by companies competing against each other and not fixing markets, fixing prices between them. Secondly, there is an aspect of competition law which concerns what is called in European law abuse of a dominant position, where a company or group of companies have, as it were, collected the economic power in a particular area and are therefore able to act independently of the public interest, for example, by fixing the prices of all their products down the chain of distribution. So that's the second element. The third element is control of mergers, controlling the way in which companies get together in a merger, because effectively a merger in some cases may produce a dominant position. You will not have the advantage of competition. And the last aspect is control of state aids, and that's one of the highly contested areas in the negotiations between the UK and the EU at the moment. The idea of state aids is that the state, whether it's national or local, should not give financial advantage to their own companies, which will distort the level playing field of competition as between different countries. Now, COVID-19 has presented a problem for each of these areas. And the problem is still, to some extent, hidden. It will come out in the course of events. First of all, as regards competition between companies, the situation has arisen in which it is not disadvantageous for companies to share ideas, but positively advantageous. We want companies to cooperate to produce answers to the problems that the COVID-19 pandemic has created. Well, we want companies to cooperate, but how are the normal rules of competition to be applied in that case? Because the normal rules of competition say that companies should not share ideas in that way. So how are the rules to be applied? Because the rules are set out very clearly in the case of the EU, in the treaty and in regulations made under it, but also in this country. There is what is known as the competition authority, and that is concerned with ensuring competition between companies. Then in relation to a dominant position, evidently any company that is able to get a vaccine which works will be effectively in a dominant position, because it will be able to sell this vaccine and fix the price of it. And so how is that to be controlled? Because if you apply too heavy a hand, then the incentive to be first in producing an effective vaccine will be removed. So there's another problem in the pipeline. Mergers, obviously, in some cases, companies may well feel, well, both of us have got some advantageous position in this particular crisis, and let's get together, let's merge. How is that to be controlled? Because there are very strict rules as to mergers of companies above a certain size. And lastly, state aids. The state is providing money to companies to keep them going. That may distort competition because some companies will be better off than others. And for example, companies and corporations may be better off than the in the economic field than the self-employed, although they're both operating in the same market, so to speak. So there are problems for the fair application of competition law, which simply have to be thought through. And this is something where I and others at the University of Edinburgh have written a paper which is published online by the European Policy Centre in Brussels, called EU Law in the Time of COVID-19. You'll get it on what is called the EPC blog. There are many things to be thought about.
Thank you very much indeed. I think we all join together to thank Professor Dahlan and Sir David Edward for giving us not just a masterclass in terms of how the current global pandemic impacts law, but also just the, you know, the sheer way in which you've shown us how lawyers and the judiciary think things through. I think that's so valuable.